If data is like money, it's an asset, and it can be used for good or bad. Let's set up a construct where it can be used as effectively as possible for good.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and this is Future Proof.
I'm very excited about this conversation. Business ethics, you know, how we operate ethically with data and technology, it's one of the most critical issues facing businesses today. To that end, this week we have Sheila Kohl-Klaeser in the house. Sheila's the Global Chief Digital Responsibility and Public Policy Officer at Kinesso, and she's a recognized global thought leader on applied data ethics, accountable data governance, and human-centered digital responsibility. We discuss today's most compelling data ethics challenges, harnessing technology for good, ethical and unethical advertising, and how important data security will be in the years ahead. So let's jump right in. Sheila, welcome to Future Proof.
Delighted to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
So, you know, the first thing I like to ask people, and I know some of this is in the intro, but who are you and what do you do on a day-to-day basis? How do you define yourself?
Well, I'm Sheila Kohl-Klaeser. I'm a mother, a daughter, a sister, a friend, and a professional for an incredible company that is integrity-based and tries every day to innovate and serve in ways that are good for people. I have a role that is around digital responsibility, so I really get to be thoughtful about how to do right and how to do good things to be responsible and answerable for the data and technology that we use.
I actually want to ask you about that because I know that you're an expert in the area of digital responsibility, but I feel like we have to unpack that for people a little bit. So, you know, in terms of your work, how do you define digital responsibility?
Great question. Thank you so much. In our connected world, in our connected lives, our personal lives are now connected. Our professional lives are more connected than they've ever been, especially in today's world after, you know, moving through the pandemic time. And data has become vast and the technology very complex. Digital responsibility is the governance. It is the intention, the commitment, the process to use data and technology in ways that are ethical, accountable, safe, and secure. And that's what digital responsibility is.
So building on that, I guess, what's data ethics? Because I think that this is obviously an area that's growing. A lot of people are talking about it. And then also, how does a data ethics professional actually leverage their know-how to solve data ethics problems that are out there in the world?
Data ethics is this notion that data should serve people, that when companies, and for that matter, governments, use data or their devices or technology creates data, that all of that should be in service to people. So the design ethos is people at the center, and it's really two parts. What are the benefits to people? What is the service? Is it valuable? And the other piece is harm. Are we detecting and preventing harm to people? And that's data ethics in a nutshell, but I'm going to really break it down into, when you operationalize, into three parts. The first one is it legal? And legal is a social norm, if you will. It's things that our societies have considered and decided is right or wrong. So you have to start there, but that's not enough. That's the minimum. The next one really is that harms test. Is this a just use of data and technology? Have I detected and prevented bias, discrimination, or other types of harms? And then the third layer, is what I call the F word. Is it a fair use of data and technology, and would people agree? So data ethics is those three disciplines: legal, just, and fair uses of data and tech.
Oh, so I was just going to say, I really love that because I think that that's something that a lot of people are, you know, struggling about, you know, thinking about now, kind of, you know, there are, I don't want to say worry warts, but people who are concerned about the intersection there and how important it is for us to solve for that. I mean, what's an example of a data ethics problem you're seeing out there on the market, you know, like either in your own work or just kind of broadly in the market?
Well, data ethics is one of the pillars of being digitally responsible. So maybe I could talk for just a moment about the four pillars of digital responsibility, and one of them is data ethics. The second pillar is the accountability construct. Do you have data under control? Are you accountable? Do you have data governance? The third pillar is safety. Is this a safe, contextually appropriate experience or activation event for people and for brands? And then the fourth pillar is security. Are you keeping the data secure? Are your systems secure? Do you have ingress, egress controls, things like that? And that in and of itself is an arms race. So one of the things that is not ethical is if you don't secure the data. One of the things that is not ethical is if you don't have controls in place to make sure that data activations are safe. Another thing that is not ethical is if you aren't accountable. We have seen inadvertent bad acts and intentional bad acts. So not being appropriately operationally in control of all that is one example, or maybe the big example of what companies need to do to be ethical in the use of data. One example might be, and this is an old example of really specific application, is if you use data to trick people or manipulate people as opposed to be fair, maybe be persuasive, like this, you might be interested in this product, please come have a look, is very different than using data in ways that deceives people. So that would be a specific data ethics challenge that everyone needs to be sensitive to. And as they design data-enabled, tech-enabled applications, they need to put that design value in the design process from engineering all the way forward.
That makes a lot of sense the way you put it. I think that one thing that I see out there in the market is, and you know, by all means, push back, tell me if you disagree, but it seems that, there's an issue with figuring out how to make technology serve everyone and you know, like at a roughly equal basis, and not to have kind of like technology losers and technology winners in society. You know, like, I don't know if you agree, but like, you know, assuming you do, like, how do we make sure that technology solves everyone?
Wonderful, wonderful question. And I referenced a moment ago that we have moved into connected life. And one of the statistics that I've seen is human life was becoming connected at about 20% a year. And during the year of the pandemic, we accelerated and did 5 years worth of work in 1 year. So really, you know, many of us are work from home now. So our professional lives have become completely connected, that we don't go into the office. We don't go into the meeting rooms. We connect virtually. Our personal lives in the pandemic, we don't go shopping in the mall in masses of people, right? We do a lot more of our personal life and our social life in a connected fashion. So the point of that story is connection, and all of that connection creates data. So there needs to be a quality because we're achieving this ubiquity. And one of the things we need to be aware of is the behavior is the code. So the computer code is the conduct, right? And we need to think about that and the every person challenge, that the technology is meaningful to all, and the way that you people get to participate in the economy, in society, in the workforce is really becoming more and more technology based. So I don't know that we have it all right yet. I don't think it's fair for all yet, but to the degree the world is accelerating into the digital age, this notion of fairness, of equality, matters more and more and more. And we have to be intentional about the fairness, the equality, the tech for all. An adjacent construct is just to look at a single home in America and think how connected we are. The statistics say that each person in America on average has about 15 connected devices. I think that globally in the world, the projection is the world, the whole population of the world, there will be so many connected devices by the year 2030 that they're expecting, or the projection is 15 connected devices per person in the world by the year 2030. So the issue that you've raised about equality and fairness to all people really matters two ways.
Well, you know, I think that the way that I kind of think about it, and you know, there's some people who just believe in fairness on principle, but then I think even people who are purely, let's say, capitalist, they might be able to think about it in the way of, well, if you give access to everybody, including people who wouldn't otherwise have access, they have the ability to create the next great company, which then has the opportunity to lift up, you know, everybody in an economy and employ a lot of people who might not otherwise have as, let's say, a good job. So basically, there is some type of capitalist virtue in providing that type of access and making sure that everybody has access to the technology that can help them get ahead.
I love that notion of capitalist virtue, letting the markets work, letting new market entrants, new thinkers, new innovation. We do need laws that enable that, and we don't always have the right kind of laws that are fit for purpose for the digital age. And that's one of the things we need to work really hard on in the United States and Washington, D.C. this year, is getting a law that is really future prepared for the connected age or the digital age, where people can compete and enter the market and innovate and come up with new fresh ideas and participate in our economy.
So I think there are so many different stories out there right now about ways in which technology's gone wrong or unintended consequences and all. So there's so much of that out there. But let's take a counterpoint to that. What are some of the areas where we're harnessing technology for good that get you the most excited, that show the most promise?
Well, I work in the marketing and advertising field, and I think we're innovating really well. You know, it's less spray and pray advertising, more meaningful, connected, value-based marketing and advertising to people who actually want to be connected to a brand. So that's really good in my field. But in the broader sense, in the world of connected device and some of the amazing innovation, smart medicine comes to mind. And that sensor-embedded med that can measure each person's reaction to their specific medicine. And we've never had that capability or that view before, never been able to achieve that kind of understanding of the human body to medicine on a one-by-one basis. This is true personalized medicine. Then you can tune that and really help human lives. Ultimately, with that kind of insight plus advanced algorithms in the form of AI, we may be able to eradicate disease. We may be able to help population health in a way we've never been able to do before. Another one of my favorite data and technology enabled sectors is smart water. Water is a precious resource. And there's a really wonderful product on the market, smart water, called Finn. And it's a device loaded with AI that you load into your water system. And it learns your water consumption habits. It does amazing things. Like once it learns what your patterns are, it can detect a pinhole size anomaly in your water system. So it can help you be smarter about your water consumption habits, and it can let you know when you've got a leakage problem. It's genius technology, really. So, you know, just a couple of the examples of ways that help us all be better humans, more thoughtful humans, and then possibly even cure disease.
See, I think that's really great, because there are a lot of things out there that I noticed. This is a whole nother topic about kind of like where the media will necessarily cover. And, you know, there's an obvious desire to cover things that are going to get clicks and eyeballs, and sometimes focusing on all of the, let's say, damage that technology can do when it runs amok, when it's used improperly, gets covered a little bit more, because I just think that people might find that more interesting. But then when you think about all of the good things it can do, like what you were just pointing at, I think that there's a huge opportunity for us to, you know, reinforce that and let people know that there are some good things out there that tech can do, because in fact, there's probably a whole lot more good than it can do than evil, arguably.
I agree. I think that data and technology, used benevolently, used responsibly, used accountably and transparently, can solve many of the problems in the world. We can pump all the data about our Earth, about climate change, and really understand how to tune the knobs and help our Earth. We can do the same kind of deep dive, data-driven, technology-enabled analytics on a variety of human problems. So it can be used for good. However, when things are opaque, when the motives are not virtuous, when there is no transparency and you can't see into what companies are doing, or for that matter, what governments are doing, I think it is a cause for concern. Transparency is a key construct. Let the sunshine in. Let us see, and let us have some control as people. As a corporate person, I think all of this starts with values. What is important? What do you intend to do? What are your intentions? And then are you committed to those intentions? And from your commitment, you articulate what the policy is, and then you translate the policy into process. And if all of the goodness that is possible, if all companies and governments come together around core human values of do good, not bad, and then we do go through the, that's our intention, and we commit, and then we put processes and we have oversight and monitoring, I think we have a very bright future ahead for all people.
Well, and it sounds like you and I are similar in terms of, you know, believing that doing the right and the fair thing ultimately means long-term benefits for all, you know, which is great. But I think that companies have to fight against short-term thinking, because that right now it seems that the incentives are aligned towards short-term thinking rather than long-term thinking. And I don't know if you have any solution for that or anything you would advocate for.
Well, I think you're right. I think we've seen lots of instances of short-term thinking, and of certainly in my capacity, I do bump into that, and I undertake a lot of education and a lot of discussion. I want to throw out the big word, and that is trust. Trust is the underpinning of all human relationship. It's the underpinning of my relationship with my children, yours with your partner, us with the brands we choose, with our governments. Trust. And in the marketplace, trust either creates a vibrant, effective, efficient marketplace that is durable and that can grow in a healthy way that's good for everyone, or not. And short-term thinking that is not anchored against the bigger values of goodness and trust and honesty and integrity and transparency, those are really where we keep getting hung up. What is your motive? Are you putting profit before people, or people before profit? Ultimately, I think short-term incentive that is not trust-based, because all short-term incentive is not bad. It's just the ones that do put profit at all cost as the primary objective. I think those really trip up companies and really create what I like to call a reckoning. Because ultimately, when that sees the light of day, I think it's frowned on. There's at some point there's going to be a comeuppance if you're not motivated for good.
I'm a big fan of using the word comeuppance whenever possible. So so hats off in that regard. And I do think that you're right. It's one of those things where the companies that and organizations that can fight against that short-term thinking, you know, like there will be some type of repercussion for them for, you know, not having that long-term view. And again, it's a little bit trickier, especially with like public companies, right? Because they have a natural built-in bias towards short-term quarterly thinking. But I wanted to ask you also just to think, one area where I hear a lot about the idea of ethics tied to technology is advertising, you know, and I know that you advocate for ethical advertising. So I'm wondering, what are some unethical advertising practices that we need to fight against as a society, but also as advertisers, you know, if we're going to have to, in the name of having a healthier ecosystem?
Yeah, so great questions. And it is my space, and I care deeply and passionately about it. And there's a bunch of good actors. You have to start with the premise of who is the advertiser. And ultimately, these are brands that want to reach people, connect with people, have a relationship with people, and satisfy their customers. That is their motivation. So to do advertising that reaches, connects, and satisfies people, there's a layer or a lumascape of technology and data partners that do all that connection to make it happen in the digital age. And we've had this rush to innovate over the past, 15, 20 years. And in many instances, it's the rush to innovate that, so there's some inadvertent things that don't work too well. And in other instances, there are players that are simply unaccountable and have behaved badly. There is click fraud. There are fraud, click farms that exist just to try to get the clicks that generate the money, and there's no real people behind it. So those kinds of bad acts, we simply have to do a better job of detecting and preventing. But ultimately, an accountable ecosystem with accountable players that are really trying to be this in service between brands and people to really enable the reaching, the connecting, the trust, and the satisfaction. This is what the whole digital responsibility discipline is about. How do we measure all of that so that it is ethical, not manipulative, that doesn't create or enable deception, is actually fair, and fair in a way that people themselves, you, me, would agree. This is a fair use of data about me. It is actually valuable. I like it. It's meaningful. It serves me. And if I don't like it anymore, I have the ability to control or change and affect a choice. Really, really important stuff. And in the digital space, I hear a lot of let's just stop all data. And I think that's folly, because we really have achieved data infinity.
There are certain things where I just think that people might advocate for a certain perspective that in reality has no chance at all of, winning out, in which case, why advocate for it, right? Because we are going in this direction. And in some ways, it's up to us to make sure that we go in this direction in a conscientious manner, because it's you're not stopping the train. So figure out how to drive the train properly.
I like that. I think that's a wonderful analogy. And I would also say this, we really need to flip the script. If data is like money, it's an asset and it can be used for good or bad, but it is. And every company has to have it. Every company needs it. Everything we do in our digital lives creates it. Let's set up a construct where it can be used as effectively as possible for good, for people in service.
I think that's really well said. I want to leave you with one last question, I guess, because I think a lot of people are also concerned about the security of the data that is, basically something that they're giving up. It has importance, right? And we obviously feel that security is important, but I'm wondering, how do we balance that with ease of use? Because it seems that the cost to the consumer of making sure that your data is secure is, now you've got to have a password that is, 84 digits long, characters long. And it just seems that, how do we balance those two to make it so that data can be constructive and positive and not necessarily something that causes more headaches than necessary?
Well, unfortunately, security is an arms race. The more security techniques we employ, the more the bad actors, and there are bad actors, right, that they innovate around, they overcome our security protections. So it's an arms race, and companies have to invest aggressively on an ongoing basis to protect, secure. The good news is that there is a lot of very exciting innovations coming in the world of security as it relates to things like passwords. I don't know that it's all fully deployed yet, but I've seen some very innovative blockchain security measures that securitizes beyond the capability of a password. It comes with pros and cons, but there's some biometric innovations that are very, very good. And of course, there's different types of security. When the world opens back up and we get to go to public venues, there's security challenges at a public venue. There's security challenges online, and the innovations that are coming are pretty exciting. Those too, however, not just we have to keep up with the arms race to keep everything secure, but we also have to make sure that the intention and the commitment behind securing for good purpose and not overreaching and harming people or disadvantaging people, that people really agree with the security measures that we're undertaking.
I really like that. I think that's a great way to end things. And it's a really fascinating conversation that hopefully people will get a lot out of. It's obviously an area that's really hot right now for a good reason. So Sheila, thank you so much for making the time.
Thank you, Jeremy. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks again to Sheila for making the time. I told you it was an important topic at the beginning of the show, and after listening to this conversation, I'm hoping you agree. If you like what you just heard and this is your first time here, be sure to subscribe. Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Stitcher, the choice is yours. And if you're a longtime listener, please remember to rate and review Future Proof, as that's the number one way we get the show in front of people just like you. Special thanks this week to associate producers Jason Stack and V. Cortuccio, and assistant producer Aaron Cohen. Once again, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and you've been listening to Future Proof.